world. We're back, and this is yet another installment of UPRN FM 107.7. You heard it here first. It's Drive Time Radio, Music Talk Radio. If you just tuned in, I'm Benito Childs. I've got Will Turner here with me, kind of co-hosting, but more doing technical today. You guys, it's Monday, so hold on to the steering wheel tight, and if the weather is bad, make sure the windshield wipers are working good. We got Terry Lucas with us today. Now, that may not mean a whole lot. I'll say a different set of words then. We have the individual who is responsible for the resurgence, if you will, of Solar Records. Now, a lot of us remember Solar Records as Dick Griffey's record company. I always thought that the word solar, you know, stood for like the sun, you know, the highest thing in the sky other than God. And this is what we always thought. But today, I've been educated. I just found out from Terry Lucas, who is our guest today, that Solar really means Sound of Los Angeles. I had no idea. Now, what's the R in Solar mean? Is that for recordings?
It was sound. It is sort of the pinnacle, which we did reach. Of course, nothing's higher than our God, but it is about reaching. It was about reaching to the heavens and reaching for the stars. But Solar was for Sound of Los Angeles Records. It's an acronym.
Say hello to the world, Terry Lucas. You're on with us now. You're being heard by 500 countries across the world, 166 cities across America. We want to thank iHeartRadio and our new relationship in New York with 93.5 FM. Say hello to New York, Will. Say hello to New York, Terry Lucas.
Well, hello, New York, and hello around the world. I'm honored and really looking forward to the interview and being back out and introducing our new relaunch of Solar Records. But it's a real privilege and an honor, and I'm really feel blessed to be, you know, part of what you're doing and a part of, you know, your growing company. It's a real privilege for me.
Well, thank you so much. We feel privileged and proud to have you on with us today. Will is our resident historian.
Will,
I need you to say hello to everybody. And for those who are just a little bit slow on the uptake, or, you know, haven't been around since forever, like myself, who maybe don't remember or were born during a different time period outside of Solar Records heyday, because you are a resident historian, if you don't mind, please, would you just name off some of the famous acts that became what we know them to be by virtue of their relationship with Dick Griffey and Solar Records?
Well, I'm going to say this. This interview was a year in the making, back and forth through Facebook and Instagram conversations. Then it finally happened. I got the music, and here we are today. But to let y'all know, the biggest, I say, executive in the music industry, besides Berry Gordy, was L.A. Reid. And him and Babyface got their start as a deal with Solar Records. And they had so many other hit groups. The Whispers, Rocksteady, a huge hit. So L.A. and Babyface is the artist people would know of nowadays who got their start at Solar. And they created LaFace Records and all these monumental songs.
But some of the acts that were direct, were directly or hands-on influenced by Dick Griffey himself were like The Whispers, Salami, Midnight Star, Lakeside, and Dynasty. And it's my understanding that the reason we have Ms. Lucas on today is because Solar Records is relaunching, and they've got big plans and are coming back into the forefront of the industry in a big way. And Ms. Lucas is on with us today to kind of speak on that. And why don't we just kind of jump in and let her tell the listening audience what does Solar Records have in mind as you're going to perform this resurgence, if you will, Ms. Lucas?
Well, I think, thank you for that that introduction and the information that you have there. But we basically have the intent to honor the sound of Los Angeles, which incorporated Leon Silvers, who was and is a great songwriter and producer. He wrote many of the hit songs for the Whispers and a lot of other groups. He came from the very famous and talented group, the Silvers. They had a lot of hits on their own. And we met Dick being my late husband, Dick Griffey, being the premier. He really was the premier, as he was compared to Berry Gordy in the record industry, because it was a big family of artists that came together and that we signed on Solar Records. That started out as Soul Train Records. We partnered with Don Cornelius because he and it's such a. I'm really going to be writing a book because our life story is so complex and so layered that it's kind of hard to tell everything at once, but. Dick,
I got to stop you. It sounds like you're supposed to write this novel.
Yes.
And then
yes.
Somebody equally bright is to come behind the novel and turn that into a motion picture film. And that then becomes the mini series or the one series about the whole history.
Absolutely is what we're going to do, because Dick was a big producer. He produced every major act that you can think of in the late 60s and 70s. As a matter of fact, I was in high school. Dick was a little bit older than me. I was in high school and was working at the Monterey Fairgrounds in the concession stand as a high school student, and the Temptations were there. I found out a few years later after I met Dick that he actually produced that show. So, many ways, our meeting I think was prophetic. But we met Leon, and he was in the group the Silvers, of course, and a family, a talented family. And Leon wanted to have aspirations to be a writer for obvious reasons, but because he was in the family was in a group and signed to a contract, it was a little difficult for him to have the freedom to write and produce. So Dick. We got involved, and after a period of time, he was released from his contract and began writing for Solar Records. But again, Solar started out from the meeting of Dick and Don Cornelius on Soul Train Dance Show. We had nothing to do with the dance show other than we admired it. You know, Don's wonderful hosting abilities and that voice. We had nothing to do with that, but Dick talked him into doing a record company. So it started with Soul Train Records in the mid 70s. And, that's really was the beginning of Solar Records. We started with Don with Soul Train, which only went for about a couple of years. And then Don had so many other opportunities, you know, with that huge hit of the Soul Train Dance Show, that he had so many other opportunities. He really didn't have the time to have the input into a record company. So we purchased the rights and went on and founded Solar Records from there.
Wow.
Uh-huh.
Solar Records has a rich and deep history.
Yep.
One of the things that comes to mind, because Don Cornelius was not as public as a lot of individuals who are in today's media broadcast business.
Right.
Television and radio was way different than it was in during that period of time in the 70s and 80s. What type of person is he? What is it like to work with him? I mean, we only know him as Don Cornelius, the guy who says it's going to be a stone gas, honey, because you can bet your last money. And this is a whole train. That's all we know. There's no personal stories about Don Cornelius, what kind of human being he is, what kind of, how he did his get down. Anything you can tell us about what kind of person he is?
Well, Don... Don was a very like Dick. I think they hit it off, my Dick Griffey and Don, because they were very similar in terms of their, I think, magnitude of diverse talent and abilities. They were, I think, both a little bit of Renaissance men. Don was knowledgeable in terms of groups and having that ability to, you know, anybody that watched his show and the interviews that he did with, you know, guests and artists that were on the show, you know, he had this deep, almost imposing, you know, voice, but he was very genuine. He was very warm. And he was a funny, warm, generous man. I knew Don. I came to know Don. I wasn't as much involved with the music industry in the real early days, other than being an artist. But I knew Don as a friend. He had a huge standard poodle, and he was in and out of town a lot. I'm an animal lover, and I used to keep his dog all the time. And we used to, just on a social level, we would visit a lot. And he was a very warm, generous person. I mean, if you never got that impression from the show, because he was very professional, but he was a warm, generous, funny person.
That's awesome.
Very awesome story. Now tell us about your new single.
I'm sorry. I missed that. I missed the tail end of that.
But my question was, again, we mostly understand that some of our records have this, I want to say omnipotent. I think that's the correct word. Or shall we say, extremely tall and very notable and quotable history in the entertainment industry, Solar Records.
Uh-huh.
Carrie Lewis, okay, who is the wife of the late Dick Griffey, is also a performing artist. So
right.
Tell us about this new single that you're coming out with, $40 Plan.
I've been away for, haven't been doing a lot in the public eye for many years. I stopped performing to some degree. My son, we had a son, and he was born quite early, and I found it necessary to, I mean, sometimes you can do both. You know, you can have a career, you can have, you know, your family, and they can sort of move along together. But in my particular case, our son was born very, very early, premature. So I toured a little bit when he was first born, but there was a lot of health issues and things that I needed to be a mom. So I was away for quite some time. I've continued to write, done a few shows here and there, but my daughter, Carolyn Griffey, who is in Shalimar touring with, just finished a real successful tour in England with original member Howard Hewitt and Jeffrey Daniel, who, by the way, was instrumental in showing the gifted superstar Michael Jackson how to do the moonwalk. Yeah, they just finished a real successful tour in England, but she was more the impetus behind the record company. She wanted to honor her father, honor the legacy. And she was handed this group Shalimar, which we owned, because Shalimar actually was a song, was a title given to a song, Disco Gardens, that we purchased from a producer. So we had to put a group together to match the song that became a hit. Of course, the original lady who was in there, she left and went on to a very successful career. There were subsequent ladies that came in the group after that, but my daughter always wanted to be in the music industry. She was kind of shy, but she's been touring with Shalimar for about 15 years now, and they really have rebuilt their career. But she wanted to honor her dad and the legacy that we did, and she was very instrumental in getting me to start meeting with people and talk about relaunching Solar Records. She introduced me many years to Jesse Fang, who is our CEO and co-founder in the relaunch of Solar Records. So I have been an artist. I have been involved in the business end of it, and I have a lot of music that I've done myself. I've worked with a lot of different artists. Of course, the Whisperers, who are like my brothers. We sang, everybody sang on everyone's music. You know, it was a family effort. And I wanted to re-enter the music industry, but I also really caught the fire to want to relaunch and honor Solar, my late husband, and a legacy. I think that is important. And it's important for a lot of young people to know that, you know, that they're, a lot of the sampling, a lot of the music that's out there today, a lot of the artists like L.A. Reid, who is an executive who started out as a singer and in the group The Deal, Babyface, Kenny Edmonds. I met so many people that we had the privilege to launch their talent to the world, and I just wanted to continue with that legacy.
That's awesome. That is awesome. You know, you said a mouthful. And one of the things that stuck out to me is you mentioned the Whispers. I happen to be from Oakland, California. That's,
oh, gosh.
That's where I was born and partially raised for the beginning part of my adolescent years till I was about 14, 15 years old. And I remember walking home from school and these guys are in the garage with their garage door open and the tuxedos are hanging on the metal hangers, and the metal hangers with the tuxedos on them are hanging on nails on the garage, and they got the drums and the B3 organ, and so we're, I don't know, maybe 12, okay? We're a group of young musicians, and we have no idea that the same people that we've been listening to on the radio are these guys who we're passing by their house every day after school.
Okay? Mm-hmm.
So finally they invite us in. It's because I got a pair of drumsticks hanging out in my back pocket. It's Winston who says, "Hey, who are you?"
Oh, God.
They tell us to come in, and this becomes now the every Wednesday ritual. You know, with a group of kids, they can come in on Wednesday because we're music students, and they found out that our parents were musicians, too. So now we get to hang out, and they're getting this tutoring. So I remember those days.
Wow. Yeah.
I would love to be able to interview those guys on the show on behalf of Solar Records and F1's effort. I mean, what a rich history. That was a long time ago.
They're
still working.
They're still working. They always were just it's funny, when I, it was early days of after having met Dick, and I, you know, realized that he was very influential and knew a lot. He knew everybody, really. But he told me, he says, one of these days when we come to San Francisco, someone told me about this great group. You know, they were working on the, you know, they're in the, I guess it was not the Hollywood Strip, but that was sort of the strip up there in Oakland, Chinatown, right?
Chinatown. Down Jack London Square.
Yes.
Oakland was a melting pot.
It was a melting pot. So much music came out. The power, so much music.
Escobedo. Who became then Sheila. Sheila E.
Sheila E. which he played on one of my records. I mean, it was a melting pot.
Even I think George Clinton had a son that was raised in Oakland. The girl from Brides of Frankenstein, she and I were classmates, Don Silva. I don't know if it's that way now, but it has always been that Bay Area section of Northern California has always just been Yeah. Creative people doing all kinds of fantastic stuff.
Maybe the migration, you know, there's a lot of huge acts and music that came out of Cleveland, you know, out of Ohio, and maybe a lot of people migrated. You know, as people migrate, they migrate somewhere.
Okay.
So maybe a lot of those people ended up, you know, in the Bay Area.
Ohio is noted. Cleveland is noted.
Yeah, absolutely.
For its funk mob.
That's right.
The Cleveland folks, they're serious about some funk. And some jazz,
yeah.
too.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. So, but we learned. He told me about this group, the Whispers, and I thought, oh, here we go, another group. But boy, we went and saw them one night, and I was blown away. I mean, not just their harmonies and their music, but I mean, those guys were Nicholas Caldwell, rest in peace, was one of the biggest. Smoothest in the old days, used to call them hookers, was the biggest, smoothest dancer, and of course one of the best. And he didn't make the longevity with the Whispers, but Gordy Harmon, I mean, all, and of course Marcus Hudson, all those guys were just, you know, they were top notch. They were incredible performers. They really were the legs that the Whispers, they had the music and they were out front, but, the dancers were just as much a part of that music.
You're absolutely right. I can remember being, you know, a young kid and watching those guys rehearse.
Mm-hmm.
To think about that now, I mean, it just really kind of smacked me with it. I'm sitting here going, wow.
Yeah.
We were sitting there as a kid watching history be made.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, I think it's our lives, you know, we do things and at that time, you know, we don't even think about history so much. It's you're living your life, you're hopefully, you know, doing something you love or attempting to do something you love, and you're surrounded with people that are doing the same thing. And, you know, not that one profession is greater or bigger than the other. It's just your experience. And you look back as you just said, you look back on your life and it really was about a lot of history making events, you know, that you helped launch into the world. And it's very rewarding. It's very rewarding. And I worked with so many, people in the beginning, artists and singers and writers and arrangers. I just remember so many people, like you said, I just like mentioning these. John Parrish, who has passed, he was an incredible, was the Whispers music director, incredible arranger and writer and a musician. Just, you know, so many people that come to mind when I think about those days.
Now, you're going to have them over to the UK to put in work through the new Solar Records?
Well, like I said, this is a really, even though Solar Records has a rich, long history, and it was many, many years, you know, founded many, many years ago, this really is a new effort with new people involved. Of course, you know, we have our history and our legacy that we would like to honor. We actually approached Leon it was my desire and heart to maybe have a song from Leon. As Shalimar released a song, the Real Thing that Leon wrote and produced, and they released their song, and it was my hope that one of the first songs could be a composition by Leon, but, you know, he's in such demand, and he's got, you know, big family and producing a lot of his own music. We just couldn't get the right time to, you know, to come together and have him do a song. So we went ahead and, like I said, we hope we capture that sound, to honor that sound and that music on my first song with the new relaunch. But yeah, I'm looking to, you know, reach out to some of the acts, of course, the Whispers, like I said, who are like family, and maybe sometime in the future we can have a song by Leon, and just, yeah, involve some of the, you know, some of the original artists that were on the original Solar Records. That's a hope, but that's all in the works. That's all, because everyone is, you know, doing touring and doing their own thing, and, you know, life has a way of, you know, taking you different places. So that's about, coming together.
You know, I had to ask. I mean, you know, the whispers.
Yeah.
A re-release on Solar Records or something brand new, produced by some young folks who are just really bringing it. The business is different than the way it used to be.
Right. Yeah, everything is different with the media. Everything is different.
Said that, you know, I always wanted to ask you, once I found out that you knew Stevie Wonder and that you were a member or worked along with Wonder Love, what was that like for you?
I'm still flabbergasted by it. Dick did that. I keep bringing Richard, my late husband, into it, because obviously he was instrumental in my beginnings and everything that I did and all the people in the music industry that I met. But he did the first big international tour for Stevie Wonder in Japan and parts of Europe. And so, of course, I was there as well. I was there at Stevie's rehearsal. You know what? I've seen a lot of artists. I've never seen anyone work like Stevie. He's like that bunny with that battery. He never stops. Stevie will work all night. Well, we call it work, but he will perform and rehearse all night, and everybody will be sort of, you know, tired, and Stevie could just go on and on and on. But in the time period when I was out on tour, not as an artist, but just along with Dick at that time, you know, I would be there on rehearsals, and I met everybody, and he found out that I could sing, and I would rehearse with Wonder Love a little bit. And one night, Denise Williams, who, you know, I'll have to say who she is, but Denise Williams was a part of Wonder Love. Niecy, yes.
She was part of Wonder Love.
She was Tuesday Green. I mean, he had, you know, Stevie had the best, Greg Feeling.
Well,
I mean, he had the best musicians. I mean, you know, we have incredible musicians, and he had some of the top-notch ones. But his background singers consisted of, at that time, Wonder Love was Niecy and Susie Green and a group, you know, of other talented women. And Niecy got sick one night, and she couldn't go on stage. We were at the Forum. We did the Forum, but we went to Europe. But we were at the Forum, and she got ill, and I went up on stage just, you know, to sing a little a bit of the background, and Stevie did a song, and he said, "Take it, Carrie." I think it was the sunshine of my life, and I almost like passed out. But Stevie is another, as talented as he is, and the hits and hits and hits, just a really warm, giving, creative giant, just a very generous, good guy. And also his first child that was born, and isn't she lovely? The baby was born out there on the road, and he wrote that song. He of course has a another life and other children, but that was the first child, and we were out there with his wife when she was pregnant, and she had the baby, and he wrote that song out on the road. So I just, so much history. Sometimes I don't even know where to start. I don't mean to ramble, but so much went on.
That's a part of so much history. You know,
we have
quite a few million listeners around the world. Last season, they told us at our mother network, where we started this podcast from 4 seasons ago, that only 20% of our listeners are in America. But
Now
the conversation that we're having is what makes it fun. Because even in America, this history is unknown. So, you know, this is what we do on our show here on You Heard It Here First, and that's the whole idea. You heard it here first. For the first time, Carrie Lucas says, "You know what? I think I'm going to write a book. The book is going to become a movie. The movie is going to become
absolutely
a miniseries, and the miniseries is going to become a weekly series."
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And I just like to add a little memo to Stevie. So that little, that situation when his first child was born, that's when he wrote, "Isn't She Lovely?" And if you listen to the long version, you hear a little baby in the background and again,
well,
Yolanda. Yeah. "Isn't She Lovely?" He wrote that. Yeah. That's when he wrote that song.
I was a very young man then, and I thought to myself, wait a minute, what part of the game is this? Brought the baby into the recording studio.
Yes. Yeah.
And put the baby on the microphone.
Put the baby on the microphone.
You know, yeah. I went and got the album, and I wanted to see if the baby got credits, because I was learning the business part of the music business at that time. Second person to do that, I think, was, oh, my goodness, I cannot remember her name. Lynn Fidmon. That's who did. She had had a baby named Courtney. It's the baby, and it's just so cute. She's a little giggly, bubbly baby. It sounds like the newborn. This baby sounds like it's going to be a bad baby, you know, fall into the skits and come up singing. But so, and Courtney's Festival, I think that's the name. It's
okay.
A jazz piece. You would have liked it if you heard it. It's by the singer and her people, Lynn Fidmon. I think she's part of the people involved with, I think that's, help me out, Will. The name of the keyboard player is Charles Fidmon. And I think he plays for, not sure, maybe Mays, I think. Maybe definitely a Mays. Anyway, it's a nice piece. They put the baby on, and that's the only reason I'm making it, because that was the second time I heard it.
Yeah.
I thought to myself, okay, either the kid is already in the business, or for real, the song is what happened because
of
the baby.
Yeah, because of the, I mean, if you listen to the lyrics, you know, really listen, I mean, Stevie, you almost don't have to even, you know, comprehend lyrics because of his music, you know, and just the way he composes a song. But, you know, if you really listen to the content of those lyrics, it really is about his firstborn. And it was exciting. Every time I hear that, you know, "Isn't She Lovely?" It just brings back, you know, those really great memories.
Now, wait, now, my notes say that you worked with Lakeside. I kind of hung up with those guys when they were doing the Bay Area thing. What was that like for you?
Again, you know, I probably sound redundant when I talk about, you know, the artists that were on Solar Records, but, you know, we were a fledgling record company. Nobody knew. You talked about people didn't know a lot about Don Cornelius. Obviously, no one knew. At least he was on TV. No one knew anything about Dick or his background or his, you know, abilities. He was a musician. He was a drummer and a singer. He came from a family of his mother was a writer and in the Baptist church. So he the whole family harmonized. You know, a lot of, you know, African American families do that. You know, they don't sometimes have the outlet of a record company, but. But so it was really a labor of love when we founded Solar Records. He had an eye as Berry Gordy did to recognize talent a little bit in the raw. You know, people come to you when you have a company and they bring songs and they, you know, send pictures and tell you about acts. So it really was a process of going out and listening to acts and listening to music that came in. And so Lakeside was one of the and also Dick liked the idea as a record company owner of self-contained acts. He liked the idea of the complete package, the acts that could, instead of having to look for music, I had the privilege of being able to pick and choose different songs, and I did write some things, but he liked the idea of the complete package. That's why, you know, it was Lakeside and the Whispers. The Whispers always had a great band, and Climax, and so many of the acts. So, you know, we didn't have the big budgets of the RCAs, of the Sonys, of the BMIs and all that stuff back then. And everybody just worked together. Everybody sang on everybody's records. Those guys, Lakeside, guys in Lakeside, Steve Stockley.
I got a twofold question for you.
Uh-huh.
Some of it, the first part of the question is industry insider stuff. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, that's a distinction, you know, in terms of the way things were back in the day. Okay? And I'm raised in the business school, so I saw a lot of stuff coming up. Being part of the label was really more like your extended family. Okay?
Yes. Yeah.
Everybody took care of everybody. You know, if you had a problem reading, the guy that, you know, you helped count would help you read. It doesn't work that way anymore. But what is your opinion about the difference between the way the businesses were operated, the people power, okay, back then versus, and of course, technology speeds up everything versus the way things are done today with highly modernized technology, buttons that make you sound like you can really sing, but you can't, and you can still make a living off with you and the button.
Okay. Oh gosh!
It used to be a joke back in the day when I was a very young man, and I've had all the jobs. This is my first time being a talk show host.
Uh-huh.
Been doing it on the radio now for four seasons. But in other words, in life, this is the first time I've done this, the whole talk show thing. But there was a time when I was also an engineer in the recording studio. And there used to be a joke back in the day about the button on the console, you know, that was the brown button or the Thelonious Monk button. And the joke amongst the engineers and producers were we have these cats come in who they really couldn't get their stuff together. And, you know, you could mutter under your breath, but don't worry, we're doing this week. We got a button on the console marked Thelonious Monk. It'll be all right. Now, today, there's actually a button somewhere that says you two can sound like Luke Vandross, just, you know, at once.
Well, you know, that I mean, it is true. I mean, let's face it. It's, you know, the technology, a media. You know, you can be a media sensation, and you can't sing a lick if you you get your YouTube out there or your video out there.
You're what we call a new old school or old new school, because you know you're bringing the funk today right now, and you're coming back to work. You left the business to go do all kinds of other stuff, you know, your mom, your wife, you know, all the stuff that you have to do in order to know what to sing about.
Right.
In terms of the way the business goes and the way people treat each other and the speed of things and the relationships, what's the difference that's so noticeable from your perspective between where it was back in the day when it was Solar and Motown and the other companies, and everybody knew each other, everybody was cool. What's it like now in comparison?
I'm a sort of new old school. I've been away a little bit, but I obviously keep my I don't have my finger on the pulse of everything. But it seems that I can only speak from my experience. It seems, and from my late husband's experience, he opened a lot of doors for a lot of people. He did. Because he believed in community. He believed in African-American reciprocity. He believed in if you can help. I mean, obviously, he believed in making money. He said, if you can't make money and take care of yourself, you can't help anybody else. You know, so he had no problem with making money, but by the same token, he was very businesslike. He was very methodical in picking acts and what he thought would be, popular and what he thought would sell. But I think the music came first. I think today, and then, like you said, a lot of music, jazz and funk and music coming. A lot of the acts back then were, and I don't mean to degrade anybody or downplay anyone, because there are some wonderful musicians today. But back in the day, you know, you had to be a good musician.
I got to stop you, Terry Lucas, and I'm going to just be a grumpy old schooler. Okay? we earned this, okay?
You earned it,
now,
right.
Now, back in the day, I listened to the old folks say, young folks, you don't know nothing about no music. That ain't no music. That's the opposite, boy. So I don't know. People putting up with that? Really? You paying for that? For real? See y'all doing that at? Wearing my funny looking clothes with your wide legs on the Bible. What's that? We're going to sweep the floor on the way to the school. See, now, my whole point is, because we were forced to learn the history.
Right.
We understood. You're using those chops? Boy, what do you know about that? Who wrote that? Where did that come from?
Yeah,
who
taught
you how to do that?
There you go.
What is that in?
Okay. Right.
What song is that from? You better not let me hear you play it again. You're stealing from folks trying to get out here grandstanding, acting like you were born with something and you're topping off with somebody. Okay.
Right.
We don't have that kind of community policing going on in the industry now.
Well,
young kids going, hey, you know what? I paid my money. If this thing fits in my shirt pocket, I just push the button. And, you know, suddenly, you know, I sound like $1 billion and they pay me $1 million to sound that way.
Yeah, but that, you know, that just, it's the times. It's just, you know, I mean, there's nothing you can do about it. But, you know, it's a two-edged sword. In some ways, record companies really did become very arrogant. I mean, there were some great acts. Of course, everyone, you know, everybody doesn't get the opportunity. But record companies could be very isolating. They were like in this ivory tower. We were never really like that. But Dick was always accessible, and he would listen to anybody. But a lot of the big record companies, I think they were a bit of a mixture of their own downfall, especially with the new technology, because you can get, obviously you still need a record company, you know, but you can get out there and you can go viral, and you don't have to have a record company. But you know, and some of the arrogance, I think, was bypassed with the new technology. But you're right, you know, we don't have the same. You know, you went out there and you did little mom and pop record stores, and you did the mom and pop, you know, clubs, and you really developed a base. And you know, you had some of the great musicians that influenced you, or a lot of the artists today, you know, they're sampling. I mean, you hear. Sometimes I'll be listening to music and my kids will be listening to stuff and I'm going, let me play this for you. And I'll go play, you know, one of the old songs. And yeah, of course they don't know, you know, I mean, 10 years and it's a whole nother generation. And it was funny. There was one of my songs that somebody sampled something and someone said, I saw an article my daughter showed me and we laughed about it. They said, Terry Lucas is copying somebody. And I had done the song before this person was even walking. So, you know, what are you going to do? You can't fight technology. You have your experience. You do the best. You do what you love. And, you know, hopefully somebody else likes it.
Okay, so the story is not a lie that a producer told me that somebody took a consultation with him, and the guy came in, and he told this producer what essentially amounted to, I want to pay you $5,000 to do my version of your song that you wrote before I was born.
Pretty much. And then, you know, you go to YouTube and you see the comments, Terry Lucas copied so-and-so. I'm going, okay, I copied. I was singing that song and he was just walking. But, you know, you gotta have a sense of humor about it.
Oh, I do. I do. See, where I'm headed with this question is simply this. You know, we hear about the rigors of the music industry, navigating the shark-infested waters of the business, and how to be a professional musician and not lose your sanity and all your money in the process. Well, I always thought now, and forgive me for saying so, but somebody pulled me aside and he said, look, there's a difference between being gifted and being talented.
Right.
Now, If you're gifted, the record company is looking for you.
Right.
Okay? If you're talented, you're hoping that you can find the record company.
There you go.
Something impressive that they want to be about this week. And you know it's not going to last forever. Okay.
Right.
You're not going to die doing this job. The day will come where, okay, well, you know, they don't want that no more. And you ain't got nothing new, so, you know, find something else to do. All right. Given that, all right, what is the purpose of a record company in today's business climate with all of these other different alternative ways that one could go out and, shall we say, for sake of no better terms, have himself a career in the entertainment industry and actually lay claim that this is what I do. They're not a member of the union. They're not professionally studied. They don't have the traditional apparatuses that we all know about that exist. You know, there's no business affairs department. There's no publishing company. There's no booking agent. And somehow they managed to make that $6,000, $7,000, $8,000 a month in CD or download screenwriting. Being the actors, being featured in the lowrider show once a month, whatever they have to do. Now, given that, what does a record company provide? And the reason I ask that question is because quite a few of our listeners are music business aficionados. They're young hopefuls who really are looking at the whole business infrastructure, everything going, well, wait a minute. What really are you supposed to do, and who has what, and why do you want it? What are the real options and alternatives? And coming from the standpoint of view that Solar Records is now a new label with either everything it already wants in it or doing what everybody else is doing, you know, like it used to be. Well, show me what you got. Let me hear. Everybody had a Walkman. If you could get anywhere near the late Dick Griffey, and you had a Walkman cassette and a pair of headsets, you could get 3 minutes. You could get 15 minutes. And we look, man, it's good, but you need to do this, this, and this. You know what? This right here is played out. That's cool, but you need to just put that over to the side, and, you know, we'll do one like that later on. Right now, somebody's making a whole bunch of money off of it. We don't have that. Or do we?
Well, I think to a degree that's all, you know, that's always going to be, there's always going to be a usefulness in a record company. I mean, let's face it, these, obviously, there's a segment of especially, the, you know, these young kids, they know technology the way, you know, they grow up on this technology. My kids and even my grandkids, they know how to do stuff that I know how to turn the computer on. They know how to make it come alive. They know how to download. They know how to stream. They know how to do all this stuff. But I'll tell you, the record company still, you can go the route of just putting something out, and then there's a huge, if it hits, you got all the publicity. You can get booked a lot easier. But when you register your music, the streaming does still pay, because there are people that, there's still a vast amount of people that don't know how to do the streaming that will go to, you know, Amazon or iTunes or, you know, any of the different media outlets and stream. So you're not going to have, I mean, but even in the old days, you know, people used to bootleg albums, you know, so there's always going to be that segment, but there's enough out there. Millions, and like you said, your format doesn't just reach the majority of people in the United States. It's a global, you know, it is a global market, and so that global market, there is going to be a lot of opportunity for people to get your music and you don't really get paid for it in terms of money in your pocket, but there's still a large segment. You can't get it all. But, you know, there's a segment that you still can get enough to make it profitable. You still can register your music and you will get paid, not like in the old days, but you have a lot more exposure and a lot more opportunities to work. So it's it is different, but in some ways it is the same, because there's always been a way to bootleg anything. You know that.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely. I was so surprised to travel around the world and see the Chinese version of the Temptations, getting all the same
yes!
and doing all the same dance.
Isn't that amazing? Right. Didn't miss a note. So that, you know, that global market is, you know, it's amazing, and it's an opportunity, and it's something to be, you know, it's something to be reckoned with and recognized, and there is money to be made out there. Like you said, you're not going to get it all, but there's enough out there to make it profitable.
With me?
I'm still here.
Oh, okay. I had dead air for a second. I didn't know what happened. Something was happening with my communication device here.
Yeah.
There's a song in your history called Dust in the Wind.
Uh-huh.
What was the concept behind that? We all put that together.
Well, that was another collaboration with the Whispers. It was written by the late, great Grady Wilkins. And I also had a little hand in writing some of the lyrics. There again, it was, you know, our sort of a family effort. If somebody needed some music or some lyrics, you know, we all worked together. But it was just a labor of love. You know, in the old days, we would sit and listen to music. And if we heard something we liked, you know, we would go into the studio. And of course, working with the Whispers, and they're great musicians. Somebody was always coming up with a great song. So that was a labor of love. I got the opportunity to sit, you know, to sing with them, with Scotty and Walter. We did if you get a chance, I don't know if you've seen it yet. You know, they're rebroadcasting a lot of this stuff on YouTube, and we did this song on Soul Train. On the Soul Train show, and I had the opportunity to do it with all the Whispers. And boy, if there's anything better than singing with one Whisper, is singing with all five.
Oh, wow.
And I scattered with the Scotty and Walter. They're just some of the, you know, premier great, great singers. And
you know, when those guys were 4 feet in front of me, I didn't sing at the time. I started as a drummer. Years later, I decided, okay, I'm tired of this job. I want the guy up front. They make more money and look at the prettier girls, and they get invited to the party first. You know, and get paid to go to rehearsal. I don't want to be back here. I want to be up front.
There you go.
And I know, when those guys were letting me hang out in their mom's garage while they rehearsed, you know, years later, I was going to need that stuff. I would have been taking more, you know, better notes, and I would have been paying better attention. But I got it.
Right.
But I got it.
that's the important point, is that you got it. But, yeah, just a memory. And it's a beautiful song, just beautiful melody, lyrics, everything about it, all the way around. It was a great song and a great memory. And you know, it's funny. The song is really prophetic. Just a memory. It was a great song performance all the way around, and it is a great cherished memory.
So tell us a little bit more about what you got planned, or what Solar has planned as you guys are coming out. What genre is it going to be? Is it going to be new acts? Where are we going here?
Well, you're sort of asking some of the
or is that stuff classified right now?
Well, you know what? A little bit classified. We want to have a little bit of an element of surprise. We're listening to, we have obviously some artists coming to us with some music that we love. I have some family members, and my grandson, Kid Third, is a performer and artist and rapper. And you know what? Just as the market and genre has opened up in so many different areas, we're going to maybe come full circle. We want to honor the sound of Solar and the legacy of the great writers, but we also want to come with some new things. So a lot of it is a work in progress, and we want to launch things out there as a big surprise and see the reaction that we get. It's like the song that we released. It's had a great reception. You know, it really was marketed more towards the European market, but I'm just, because I think the world is such a small place now, I've gotten tremendous response and support, you know, right here in America, which I love, you know, is my home. So I'm going to be a little cryptic here and not really divulge too much, but we just hope that, you know, people will keep their eyes and ears open and listen as we move forward with our legacy sound and with new music that we hope to do with new artists.
All right, well, you heard it here first. Y'all know what to do. Keep it open, keep your eyes open, and listen out for what Solar Records is going to be doing as they resurge as a new force to be reckoned with in the music industry today. Being relaunched from the United Kingdom, which I find very interesting, being that the company started in Los Angeles. But I will say that the sounds that came out of Solar are more appreciated around the world today, still purchased around the world.
Right.
And that genre and that sound is respected. We are as R&Bers, if you want to call it that, from that genre, ambassadors of the industry around the world. And we know this. We do expect that the younger generation will pick up on the history, but who knows? In the meanwhile, you go where you appreciate it and respect it.
There you
go.
That
makes all the sense in the world to me, as a member of the industry myself. That makes all the sense in the world.
Absolutely.
We see a resurgence of appreciation for this style of music and for the players, too, in the American market.
Right.
Of course, I'm talking to everybody. Y'all know what I mean. That means if you see something on the internet that says Lakeside is playing down the street from your house and you're under 30 years old, you should go.
Yeah.
Okay? if the Whispers are playing someplace on Valentine's Day and they haven't been there in 5 years, you should go.
Not because
they need the money.
Right.
Because this is where today's sound actually comes from and then some. Most of the people who are consumers have no idea what the root is of what they're consuming audibly. Saying, I'm not saying you're not getting the real thing. I'm just saying if you really want to know where it comes from, then you should have some of this stuff, okay?
Yeah, and I appreciate that because I mean it's true with the Whispers and Lakeside and the Leon Silvers and the Writers. It's important to know what's going on, you know, in contemporary music, but it's also history is important, you know, and music history is important. Black music is important, and just like the music before, you know, Solar. I mean, so you know, there's a lot of pride there. There's a lot of a love that was put into that, a love of our culture, love of our music, love of our people, and hopefully, and it was received with open arms to the world. So we should embrace, you know, we should embrace our own gems, and I hope, you know, people will do that. You said a mouthful. I appreciate that.
I hope everybody heard. Y'all know what I mean. But having said that, let's take a quick pause for the station ID. Everybody, if you just tuned in, you are listening to You Heard It Here First. My name is Benito Childs. We've got Will Turner on with us as our co-host. And our guest for this afternoon's Drive Time segment is Carrie Lucas. Want to say thank you to iHeartRadio, Deezer, SoundCloud, iTunes, and many more, including our latest New York affiliate. We're being broadcast live out of 93.5 FM, New York. Tune in for Drive Time Radio on your way home from work or on your way in to play.
That's it's been my pleasure. My pleasure.
We'll get right back to Kevin Lucas. Bill Turner, if you would please, some more questions and closing commentary.
Yes, I would like to know, well, how was it working with Greg Fillingham, the great arranger?
Greg is really funny. He was very, very young at the time. Having done Stevie Wonder's tour, of course, we met all the musicians, and Dick and I were so impressed with this little young guy who looked like he was 12, but played like Stevie Wonder. And obviously, you know, Stevie always had incredible musicians, so that tells you right there what his credentials were to be that young and, you know, and working in Stevie Wonder's band. But he also was just this nice, kind of quiet, seemed quiet, young man, and we just struck up a friendship. Dick offered some other opportunities. Stevie was very, very generous, you know, with his musicians to allow them to go and, you know, do other things, because everybody grows up, and Stevie, just, you know, just being the super talent that he was and continues to be, was generous with his musicians, as Denise, you know, Niecy and so many of the others. But Greg was wonderful. We co-wrote some things. He would come to the house all the time. And that's just another cherished memory and a privilege to have worked with somebody of his caliber. Of course, you know, he went on later to do work with everybody. Was a musical director for Michael, Michael Jackson, and that whole tour that he did. I was blessed. God bless the work that we did, and I feel privileged and honored to have worked with Greg and so many other wonderful artists.
That's awesome. Now I want to ask you a question. You work with one of my favorite producers from the 1980s, Reggie Calloway. How was it working with the founder of the Midnight Star?
Yeah, I'm going to sound like a broken record, but Reggie and Vincent, you know, those guys, you know, they're hit makers, okay? hit makers and great songwriters, great producers, great musicians. I mean, that was the blessing of being able to listen to different groups and different music and just having the honor to work with people like that. It was a privilege, and it was a joy to work with Reggie. He still continues to work. He's involved. He's such a businessman today, with music and reissuing songs, and Reggie took a whole another direction, kind of like L.A. Reid. He continues to be a great writer, great producer, and a really good human being. And he's still a good friend.
That's awesome. Now I want to ask you a question. Go ahead, Ben.
I just wanted to give a side comment on the name Reggie Calloway. For those who were not there, we'll just say that the words Reggie Calloway and Hot Hands meant the same thing back in the day as a musician.
Wow.
Well, that's a well-deserved title, because he was and is an incredible musician. And I had the privilege of working with him, and anybody who works with Reggie, and also Vincent, his brother, the Calloway brothers. They, of course, you know, they started in the group, but then they had their own group, and they're just hot hands, you know, hot group.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So tell us, Kerry, you were away from the business for a while, and now you're coming back, and you got this single. Now, are you going to be helping call shots at Solar? Are you going out on the road making videos? Of course, I know you want to write the book, and you want to do movies and stuff, too. But in the meanwhile, are we going to be able to find you performing live anywhere?
Yes. Yeah, I'm actually, we're getting ready to shoot a video, and we released the song, and the video should be out there in the next, I would say in the next 2 weeks. And
okay.
I'm gonna be doing, so keep me in mind for bookings and
okay.
we'll be doing shows and gonna get back with both feet and doing it all.
Excellent. This is awesome. I am like really got my fingers and toes crossed for you as you step out to do this again, man. You know, I want it to be a lot of fun for you. I want to be close by.
Okay, good.
And see you get down. I've heard a lot about you. I never got to meet you in person, but I'm one of the people from the Bay Area that's what's considered a child prodigy. So I was close by all the time. I remember all these people. I've been about 4 feet from them.
Yeah.
And we have served ourselves potato salad and barbecue out of the same standing plate.
Well, you know, it doesn't get any better than that, right?
No, it doesn't.
So good.
I've come full circle, and I'm on the air talking to you. You know, I don't have words for what that feels like. Will, I got to just say, my hat is off to you, sir. Thank you. This is like a gift that you gave me without telling me that you were going to do it. Gary Lucas, it's such a privilege and a pleasure to have you on the air with us. You've been listening to Music Talk Radio. This is You Heard It Here First on FM 93.5, FM 107.7. We want to say thank you to iHeartRadio, Deezer, iTunes, SoundCloud, Podbean Gardens, and many more. Will, you got any shout-outs you need to do?
Yes. Can we do one more question? Just the question we always do before we close out the show.
We always ask this question. But you know what? Because you just blew me away by bringing Terry Lewis on.
The First Lady Solo. First Lady.
I want you to ask the last question because I know what it is.
Okay, I'm here.
It's going to be a two-part question.
Yeah.
It's a two-part question. The first part, it means the same thing. What word of advice did you give your daughter when she wanted to be in the industry, when she wanted to start in the early?
You know, it's funny. I think, unfortunately, children of people that are in the industry that have made a really big impact, like Dick Griffey did with Solar and just knowing everybody in the industry, and then I had success and was out there. I think sometimes can silence your kids, and I've seen it in the public where, you know, kids, sometimes children of people in the industry don't cope that well.
Yeah.
My daughter really kept it close. She didn't really voice that desire too much. But and I've read it in an article that someone did on her. She said, I always wanted to do it. I was intimidated. So when I really realized that she wanted to, because she my daughter's beautiful, talented, a great singer. When I grow up, I want to be like her. I always tell her that. She likes to say she's a mini me, but she's her own unique talent. I'm so proud of her. So proud of the strength that it took to jump into a huge group like Shalimar, to stand between the two icons, Howard Hewitt and Jeffrey Daniels, and stand in between them and hold her own and take the group to a new level. They just did the London Palladium, sold out. They sold out all through Europe. So I was a little bit surprised when I found out about her, but I couldn't be more thrilled and happy. And I'm her biggest fan. So I hope that answers that.
Well, she's great, and I want to say this for all y'all. She's a health enthusiast, and she shows you. If you look at her Instagram page, she shows you what you can do when you take care of your body and you do right by your body. She's a wonderful talent.
Yeah.
I must say this now. Do you have any word of advice to any upcoming singer if they ever came up to you in the show and said they wanted to be in the industry What word of advice or encouragement you would tell to any upcoming musician or singer that want to follow in your footsteps or the footsteps of the industry?
You know what? It's hard to give advice because most of us don't take advice very well. But listen to today with so much technology, and you can press a button, as we talked earlier, you can mimic someone, you can sound like someone, but listen to some real music. Go listen to some of our incredible legendary singers and performers and jazz artists, and listen to our history. Those of us who want to perform, God puts that in our heart. And then we go down a path, and hopefully there's an outlet for it. But number one, know who you are. Know who you are in your heart. Don't be led astray by all the different little trinkets in this industry. Know your craft. Know your music. Know who you are. Know what you want, and stay true to that. And if you work hard and work hard, pray hard, learn your craft, God makes the way. God makes the way. But love your music, love what you're doing, and put your whole heart into it.
Well, I must say that was well said.
Very happy.
Yeah.
That was a mouthful. And you know what's really important about hearing that, if that's coming from the mother of a successful member of the industry.
That's right.
Coming from both perspectives of, look, hey, it's a great big old bad world out there, and you got to protect yourself. You might want to minimize your efforts. I want you to be bigger than life, but be careful. And on the same hand, you know what? Go out there and be a force to be reckoned with. I'm your mother.
That's right.
I know where you got it from. That's real big. Having said that, I think we'll stop right here.
Okay.
Kelly Lucas, again, we want to thank you for coming on with us. It's always a privilege and a pleasure. We're going to have her on again when we go live to visual. Everybody who's listening, be looking out for our first televised broadcast and podcast of the UHIH1 team. Yeah, we shortened it because it's just too hard to type all that out on the internet. So now when you want to go to our website, it's UHIH1.com. No, it's not up just yet because we're busy having it all guessed up and putting the bells and whistles on it for y'all. We're going to make it, as I like to say, more better. And, of course, Will is going to make sure that we get out of here with a heargasm. Right, Will? You got that, right?
Before we go, I want to give Ms. Lucas and everybody give shout-outs. If you have any shout-outs to anybody you want to give a shout-out to, go ahead and do it at this time.
Well, I just wanted to say it's really been a privilege and an honor. And as you grow, and you said you have the visual coming up, it'll be my pleasure to come back. I want to tell everybody to go out there and listen to Some Things Never Change, our new release. And I just want to receive the love that I've gotten. I thank you for this opportunity, and I give it right back to you.
You're very welcome.
Well, we're going to
close everybody.
We're going to close out the show with the new song and some of the classics, like Just a Memory, because this is always going to be a memory in our hearts of this day. Monumental, the First Lady of Solar. It's been a blessing.
God bless.
All right, now, if you're out driving home, keep both hands on the steering wheel. This might be, so inspiring that you might have to, start dancing and stuff, but keep your car straight now.
Be safe. God bless.
Safe. And if you're already home, enjoy your evening. Thanks for hanging out with us. We'll talk to you next Monday.
Blessings.
Walking hand in hand through life with the one you love. never be the same. Oh, what's a girl to do when the one she loves is so far away? And oh, how I pray each and every day. Who decided we'd had enough?
Remember, remember.
tell me.